You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 158 of Take a Bow. Yes, we are here on Tuesday, the first time we are doing multi-episodes a week. We're doing two episodes for the month of June, and from now on, you can come see new episodes on Tuesday and Friday. We are so excited for this, and we are kicking it off with an incredible guest. You all, if you listen to this regularly and you come back, you all know that I love Camelot, and I am obsessed with this revival and the work that Philippa Sue and Jordan Donica and Andrew Burnap were doing in the show, and even like Taylor Trent. The whole cast is just ridiculous, and we're going to get some more on. But I was so excited to get the word that I was going to be able to chat with this wonderful guest this week. Yes, he is a 2023 this year Tony nominee for his role in Camelot for Best Lead Actor in a Musical. He is just incredible as Lancelot Duloc, and the performance speaks for himself. We get to speak to Jordan Donica today, and his story is just absolutely incredible. We talk about his career and his story and everything that led up to Camelot. And I actually have a fun story time that I will talk about after this interview about what was going on that day for, in the recording process. It was kind of hilarious. So stay tuned for that. And, it was a great time. So you all are going to fall in love with Jordan. But first, we got to talk about some Broadway news. I went to see Sweeney Todd. I'm so excited. Oh my God, you guys, it was so good. Sweeney Todd, I'm obsessed. It's like one of my new favorite musicals, I think. And let me tell you, this cast is like... Now, I say this a lot, I feel like, because I like supporting cast and performers and everyone who puts in the work that they're doing. But like this cast, when I say this, like it's insane. This cast is just unbelievable. I mean, Josh Groban, I had my little skepticisms, I guess, on it. I was a little bit skeptical about him because I wasn't in love with Great Comet when I saw it on Broadway. And I was just like, you know, how is this going to work? Sweeney Todd, I mean, it's literally one of the most historic roles on Broadway. And how is he going to fare in this show? But he was incredible. I mean, literally just absolutely incredible. And probably like the best performance I've seen in quite some time came from Annaleigh Ashford. I mean, her portrayal of Mrs. Lovett is literally, I wanted so much more. I could have watched it for 5 hours and I wouldn't have even checked my phone or my watch or anything to see what time it was. You know, I would have just been like, oh my God, let me hear you sing the whole day and let me see you act this whole time. She's just absolutely incredible. I mean, you watch her and it's just like, from an actor's perspective, you see the work that was put into this character, the way that she walks, the way that she talks, the way that she has her little, the way she stands, like she has her little like tics, I guess, as a performer and as for her character that she's created. And it is just, she is phenomenal. And definitely, unfortunately for Michaela Diamond, who is my dear friend and have had on the podcast, I will be rooting for both of them. But I feel like Annaleigh Ashford has her just a little bit. So we shall see how that plays out. It'll be very, very interesting, especially, you know, with the parade and Sweeney Todd being in the same category for revival. I definitely think it's between those two as much as I love Camelot. But yeah, it's just so incredible. And everybody needs to go see this cast right now. This production is just to die for. Jordan Fisher, Gaten Matarazzo, Ruthie Ann Miles stole the show as supporting cast members. I mean, everyone was just holding their own, you know, no one outshined anybody. But it just, they, everyone everyone complimented everyone so well, but the performances were all just so top notch and just so incredible. The ensemble too, you know, it was just absolutely, I could go see it a million more times, but it's an expensive one and I know, but I promise you it's worth every single penny. It's so good. Okay. Speaking of a great show, more great shows, Fat Ham announced that they will be adding one more week of performances here on Broadway, which is super exciting. The production is now going to run through Sunday, July 2nd, which is super exciting. And tickets are on sale now for that additional week. So go get your tickets and go see Fat Ham before it closes on Broadway. I definitely want to go see it. I've heard such great things about it. And I'm so thrilled that they will be adding another week of performances. That's huge. And that's actually performing right now at the American Airlines Theater on Broadway, which we saw in the news this week. The American Airlines Theater is going to be renamed to the Todd Haynes Theater. And for those of you who don't remember or don't listen to the show every week, Todd was the artistic director of Roundabout Theater for many, many decades, probably like 40 or 50. He is an iconic producer. What he's done for the theater and Broadway as a whole is unlike anyone else. I mean, he's been a true leader for the past decades. And we were so sad to see him go. And I talked a little bit about it when his passing happened, but now we got the news that we're going to be honoring him in possibly the biggest way possible. And it's funny because, you know, Todd would have just kind of scoffed at this honoring, and he would have been like, no, I don't deserve this and everything, but I honestly can't think of anybody else who deserves this more. So I'm so thrilled that we're gonna get this. It's gonna be the Haynes Theater. I love it. I'm so excited for it, and that'll probably be happening here in the next couple weeks. So I'm very excited, and congratulations, because nobody deserves it more of the recent history here on Broadway. So shout out Todd, your legacy lives on. Moving on, Waitress the Musical. Okay, so we talked about this last week in the episode with Christine Dwyer and Matt DeAngelis, who is going to be in this pro shot. For those of you who don't know, Waitress is having a pro shot live here on Broadway. It's going to be like they filmed it like Hamilton or Come From Away type of thing, where they filmed it on stage. And we kind of got how they filmed it last week's episode. It was really cool the way he described it all. But yeah, so that's happening, and it's going to be premiering at Tribeca Film Festival on Monday, June 12th, so literally next Monday. And fortunately enough, for those of you who can't make it to Tribeca or didn't get a ticket or whatever it may have been, they are going to be live broadcasting it in Times Square, which is so exciting. They're literally going to be doing it on the corner of 7th Avenue and 47th Street, Monday, June 12th at 7:30, the same time as like the real premiere of it at the festival and everything. But they're going to be doing it on like this giant screen, and they're going to have 300 seats, but it's going to be first come, first serve. So if you are planning on going to see it, get there early, because you just don't know if there's going to be a seat available. So get your seats. Make sure you see it. It is 2.5 hours. You know, it's a Broadway show, so it's going to be a long one. So enjoy that. I take advantage of it, because I don't know if you're going to get a chance to see it for free again, which it's just so exciting. I'm so excited for this. You all know that Waitress is literally, if not my favorite musical, one of my favorite musicals. So yeah, I'm so excited. Next Monday. Be there. All right. That's all I have for you folks this week. I don't know if you all follow the Take About Instagram. I announced the schedule for this week and what was happening. I also announced the guests for the whole month and the schedule along with that. And I didn't announce the last 2 weeks. I'm saving those announcements. They are ginormous, and I'm so excited to be announcing them as soon as possible. I have to finalize the second to last episode before I make the full announcement, so I'm very excited for that. But this week, you know, Jordan Donica, and then Thursday we're gonna have the Tony Talk with a special guest, as always. And then next week, we're going to have Jesse Mueller, Javier Munoz. And then the following week, we have Alex Brightman and Matthew Broderick. So we have an incredible lineup coming at you all. And I'm just so excited about it. And you all are going to want to stay tuned. So with that being said, we're going to kick it off the two-time-a-week episode with the incredible and just so humble Jordan Donica. Jordan Donica. Curtain up. All right, everyone. Today's guest is a 2023 Tony nominee for Best Performance by an Actor in a Featured Role in a Musical for an unforgettable portrayal as Lancelot Dulock in the quote-unquote revival of Camelot. You may also know about this week's guest from shows such as Phantom of the Opera, Hamilton, My Fair Lady, and Into the Woods, amongst many other projects, both on stage and the screen. Today, it is my honor to welcome to Take a Bow, Jordan Donica. How are we doing, Jordan?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you, Eli?
Oh my God, I'm great. Happy to be here. This is super exciting for me. You're a Tony nominee now. How exciting is that?
Wild.
Yeah.
It's not something I really ever imagined, but I'm glad. I'm thankful for the recognition.
Yeah. It's incredible. So the way I usually like to start these things out is just starting at the beginning and just talking about, you know, how are we here? I mean, what inspired you to want to start entertaining others and telling stories and all the things?
Well, it was a hot summer day on July 4th back in 1993 in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh my God. Hilarious.
I grew up around music. I was born in Minnesota. I had a bit of a transient lifestyle, just in terms of moving more than most people that I know. Mm-hmm. I had a very solid, like, home foundation in my relationship with my family. But I was raised by a single mom. And I have a sister that's 9.5 years older than me. And so my first memories are of Tennessee. Before that, though, I was born in Minnesota and then lived in Chicago. But my first memories are in Tennessee, in a town called Franklin, in Spring Hill. And yeah, I was there from basically 1995-ish to 2003, like the beginning of 2002. And it was a huge music town, obviously. So, you know, you're surrounded by music, country music artists and things like that. I went to school with Miley Cyrus and her family and all of them. I didn't realize it until I was watching Hannah Montana one day and I was like, I loved Hannah Montana, by the way.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I feel like I know that girl. And I opened up my yearbook from back then. Sure enough, there it was. Or like one page, there's me. And then you turn the page and it's her. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of wild.
Really? That's crazy. Because her name wasn't Miley Cyrus, was it?
No. And my name wasn't Jordan Donica. Well, actually,
really?
It had just changed because I was born Jordan Matthew Ball. But that was my married name. My mom's maiden name is Donica. So it was changed when I was about three. So, her name is Destiny Hope.
Oh my gosh.
But I was like, oh, that's really cool. What a cool thing to just track. I'm sure she has no idea who I even would be, but I say that to just say, like, that's the kind of energy that you were surrounded by.
Yeah.
At such a young age. And my mom was an appreciator of the arts. So, you know, I would go to the Grand Ole Opry. We would go to concerts on the river. We would go see theater. And so I was very aware that it was something that one could do for a living. And, And then she took me to see Fiddler on the Roof down in Tennessee. And I was just like, whoa, like, these adults are watching these other adults play dress up.
Real. That's hilarious.
How silly is this, but also cool, because like I do this on the weekend, so you're telling me I could do this and avoid school.
There's
never avoiding school, but so it just became like anything. It just became something to do. We moved to Indiana when I was about 8.5, 9, And it was in the middle of a sports season, and so there was no joining a team right away for me. And but theater, I was just like, well, I could do that, because I knew we would see Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat every year, and at a community theater in Indianapolis. And I was like, well, there's kids in that, like, I could do that. And my family laughed and said, okay, you could try. And so my aunt took me to that audition, and I was like one of the only people there with just me, you know. I just walked. I didn't have a book or a or that silliness. And it's kind of go from there. It was I had a lot of fun doing it. I was cast, and I didn't expect to be cast, but it was fun. And I just kind of every year was a part of the theater, whether it was on stage or on the crew.
Wow.
And something I was interested in learning every little bit of storytelling. Yeah.
It's interesting. Theater kind of chose you, you know, kind of just like, yeah, that's pretty awesome.
It was just like, it was so obviously like a path. Like, it was so, I love to tell stories in general. I love the theater of life itself. I always say my favorite thing is to like go out for a meal, because I love the theater of dining, whether it's by myself or with others.
Amazing.
It's just a fun people watching experience.
It's so true. Like, everything that we do is very theatrical, you know, like any conversation that we have, it's all improvisation. You know, it's everything people watching, we become other people from what we've experienced, you know.
Exactly.
It's crazy how real life it is. It's
Shakespeare
not just
was right.
Yeah. It's seriously, that's awesome. And then, so how did we get to New York? How did we get to Broadway? I mean, what was that whole journey like for you?
I first came to New York. Broadway became a thing, quote unquote, I guess, in my head, just as far as like a measuring stick of theater itself. Because I also love history, so just to know that musical theater as an art form is distinctly American.
Yeah,
like it. It's the evolution of many worldly art forms, but the act of musical theater is something. It's to me like baseball. Like you can't really separate it from its evolution here in America and its genesis. And so I think that's really cool. You know, it has European roots, obviously, and worldly roots, but I think that alone was something that was also very attractive. And coming to New York as a kid, my mom sent me with my aunt and told her to get it out of my system, because she didn't know. It's New York City, right? Like, and we grew up in Tennessee and Indiana, so it's like very different places. And but I came here and I felt very much at home as a little boy. Like, never felt like I was lost anywhere I went in the city. Could navigate it pretty well on my own.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And so then it was literally just, I would come here and like measure myself against what I was watching and just see, because I was also training from a very young age in dance classes and in voice lessons. Because again, I was also an athlete. So it's like, okay, well, if any of these things are an avenue I want to pursue into adulthood, you have to train at all of those things.
Right.
So that's really all I did as a child. just to stay busy. And yeah, theater kind of rattled out in the end. And I very much enjoy it. And coming to New York was, yeah, like I said, just the measuring stick. I chose the college I went to because they had an internship program senior year that gets you here a semester earlier. And going to college was a big deal for my mom, especially. Mm. She didn't like pressure me to go, but like getting an education before diving into the entertainment world was something that she was very conscious about. And I'm glad, because if I had it my way, like I would have just attacked it when I was, you know, in my teens.
Right.
But she really did me a service, I believe. Mm-hmm. Because by the time I got here, like I was ready for all of it business wise. And since then, you know, I've been a business owner for 7 years now. And I don't just act, you know, I produce and I direct as well. And not just theater. So it's been, because of that way of growing up, of I need different things to do.
Right.
In life, in order to kind of serve whatever the thing is that I'm doing, just to have as many perspectives on something as possible. So yeah, coming to New York has been amazing. I've been here for 7 years since school. I booked Phantom of the Opera just before graduation and just started working and haven't really stopped.
I would say it worked out. You've had an incredible career, and I mean, still very early on. It's very exciting. Phantom, as you said, you know, Broadway debut. Talk to me about what it was like. You know, you used it as a measuring stick, so to finally like be able to reach that point of the, you know, the highest kind of point, I guess. What was that like for you and coming to New York to perform with these legends?
It was something that I, not to be, you know, one way or the other about it, but I knew I was ready for it by the time it came.
That's amazing.
But again, I think that's that consciousness of which I was raised and supported in my dreams and what I wanted, so that I was as ready as I could be, stepping on the stage. You know, I felt no nerves. I was just excited and happy to be there. And I was soaking it all in, you know, like,
yeah,
I felt very affirmed. Like I got to learn the show from Hal Prince and Gillian Lynn, and with Ali Ewald, you know, like, so yeah. Allie, so it's like, oh, I love that woman.
I love her so much.
What an amazing human being. It was great because she had also never done the show, and it was the first time in a long time that Phantom brought in two new leads at the same time, both of whom hadn't done the show. Usually, if they brought in two new leads at the same time, one of them had a relationship to the show, but not always.
Wow.
So that was cool. Or they'll do like one at a time, you know. Like
I didn't even realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got to kind of build our version of Christine and Raoul's relationship together, which
that has to help, right?
Yeah. It was affirming for me for my first time working on Broadway, you know, because she's a veteran at this. And so I could watch how she operated, but also bring myself to it and operate in the way that I like to work. And it was very symbiotic and quick. They allotted us 3 weeks to rehearse, and we rehearsed it all in a week and a half. And they're like, hey, it was just a joyous experience and a joyous thing. I think it was a gift. Part of the reason I think why I attacked my career so hard out of the gate too is because my Aunt Kathy helped to raise me. And she, like her and my mom, I always consider like my parents. You know, everyone has parent figures, and it takes more than just two people to raise any one child or any one person. I spent a lot of time with her, and she was the reason I had access to a lot of these opportunities, just in terms of time that people have to commit in order to get to an audition, get to practice, fly to a college audition, visit New York and even see what it's about. And so like, I'm thankful that I did, because she passed away 4 years ago.
Wow.
And so she's got to see like all of these things, you know, before, right, before that time. And I'm just thankful for that, honestly, because, absolutely, yes, she was there when I first met David Lai, who's now my manager, who is a conductor at Phantom of the Opera. So it was,
wow,
all very like, I don't know, energetically, I've always felt like I've been affirmed and on this path. Some people call it vocation, whatever you want to call it. But like, I've always felt comfortable in trusting that I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. And now you can kind of share this experience with her and like through her, for her, you know, type, yeah, of thing.
That's what this whole experience has been about for me personally.
I love that. Would you say it's fair to say that when you make it to Broadway, right? And it's almost, mm-hmm, like instinctively you just become a sponge, you know, especially working with Hal Prince and Ali and all of these wonderful people that you have around you. I mean, you're really working with the best of the best. So I think from my experience, I guess, like, it's just you, without even meaning to, you're trying to soak everything in. It's overwhelming as heck. But at the same time, you're trying to stay grateful and humble and all the things. I'm curious, you know, because you've been doing theater for so long that like, once you did make it to Broadway, was there anything that really kind of like stuck out with you that you kind of were able to soak in and continue to carry with you throughout the rest of your career? Or was it kind of just like another thing just at a higher level?
I would say there's a lot that I learned. First,
yeah,
I just had like memory hit. Did you do Finding Neverland? Forgive me for...
I did.
The party. I saw that show around the same time that all this was happening. So,
oh, how fun.
And I loved it. I saw it with Alfie Beau.
Yes. Oh my God.
I loved it. I cried. I was so moved. I laughed. I was entertained. Yeah. It was great. The thing that I learned is that theater is theater no matter where you go. Performance no matter where you go, and storytelling is storytelling. The paycheck might be a little bit higher, but really it's all relative to where you're living in the first place.
Yeah.
Especially doing a show like Phantom, for me, I don't want to like, you know, everyone talks about that it's taboo to talk money, but it's like the only way to rise out of some people's stations in life is to talk money, because they're not given access to the kinds of classes and education that other people, right, are. Or they don't come from families that generationally have that knowledge. So I've been thankful and lucky enough to have been raised by some great business women who you know, have an understanding of their business enough to try to impart on me a fundamental understanding of business in general. But I've been blessed to have met some decent enough people in this business to help me as well. And part of that to me is open and honest dialogue about money. And so, you know, relatively speaking, that first contract for me, when you look at it, it's like, for me, it was great at the time, like, because I'm like always up. And as long as the trajectory is up, then it's all good.
Absolutely.
Or it's the same. But like, when you really look at it on paper, it's like kind of highway robbery.
And, yeah.
You know, shit like that. But I wasn't there for that, you know.
Sure.
That's not why I had that experience. The things you learn are invaluable. You know, at Phantom, I learned what it takes to be a part of the longest running Broadway show.
Yeah.
What, like, the thing that everybody's trying to become. And then I immediately got to do Hamilton, which was that thing that Phantom was.
The new wave.
Exactly. And I got to work with that whole creative team too. So I got to bring this. I was very conscious of the knowledge. That's what I've been thankful for. Like, from college to Phantom, I was very conscious of what knowledge I was using from college in my work at Phantom. Then everything I learned at Phantom, I was conscious of bringing that into my work at Hamilton. And it was so helpful to remain even keeled throughout the process when things could get emotional, or, and understand that like part of that is just growing pains of a company trying to figure out what has already been figured out by these people over here. And every experience is going to be different. And that was cool to be a part of, you know, to both be given the freedom in a show like Hamilton to make it our own while being just on the edge of the people who come in. And people always make it their own, but being the machine aspect of it.
Sure.
Like just before it was turned into the machine that it is. So that was cool. And then I workshopped Frozen and learned what it takes to help build a show, you know, and help stitch it together and just try.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I've had a lot of these, like you said, all of these experiences that you just try to soak up information from. And then going into My Fair Lady, and the reason I did My Fair Lady was because I wanted to watch people like Diana Rigg and Norbert Leo Butz and Harry and Lauren, you know, like all of these juggernauts in my mind of acting. I wanted to just be in the room, understanding like what my role in all of that was, but how can I learn from these people? And, you know, a lot of times when you say yes to things, it also means saying no to other opportunities that on paper are way more lucrative. And, you know, it might bring more eyes or might whatever. But I think if you stay true to whatever your it is for you, and for me, I like to be my biggest critic. And so if I don't think I'm ready for something, then I'm not going to put myself out there for it, because I've learned from, you know, putting myself out for stuff that I'm not actually ready for.
Yeah.
That does never feel great. So.
Which is probably the hardest thing to do.
It is the hardest thing to do. It is. But I feel affirmed again in that, because I met a woman who was an amazing acting coach and friend for me. And I got to watch these amazing actors. And then I made the transition into TV and film that I wanted to make, but didn't feel confident enough to make.
Right.
But then I watched and worked with all of these amazing actors and learned from them and, you know, went into that experience of Charmed with that. And I had done some guest spots other places too, but, you know, every experience, like you said, you're like a sponge. And so now this experience has felt a lot like college, to be honest with
you,
which is both a great thing and a triggering thing and a yikes thing. It's been a really, wonderful culmination of 4 years of work.
Come on, TV star. Come on, series regular. No, you're so cool. No, it's so true. Like, as actors, it's like every experience is like a humbling experience, because it's like there's so much to learn on every different project that you work on, every story that you work on, every person that you are in a room with. Like, there are some incredible people in our community to just, you know, continue to soak and kind of honestly honor their legacy, you know, because we just continue to work with, you know, cool people, you know, and we can get to meet these people. I'm curious, you know, because you mentioned we were talking about Phantom, and then you mentioned Hamilton. So talking about Raoul, like fellow Frenchman, you know, you were able to play Marquis de Lafayette, who, like, honestly, a dream role of mine that I could never play, like, has always been up there, you know, like, that is, I love it. David Diggs and like everything, just Hamilton in general, like, it's just a brilliant show. Marquis de Lafayette is such a fun role, and Thomas Jefferson. I've always wanted to ask, like, I don't mean to like put you on the spot here, you don't have to answer it, but do you like, are one of those roles like more fun to play? Or like, are you able to like explore a little bit more with one or whatever it may be?
Yeah, I mean, they're both fun tracks to play, because like I love history and a big part of my process as an actor is research.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, take or leave that shit, but for me, especially because we're talking about building a character, I like to bring something tangible. I've done a lot of period pieces, so I like to bring something tangible that I can connect to as my human self today from back then. So that also validates my existence today back then.
Right.
And so because I know it's an inevitability that I'm going to come across some ignorant asshole. But which we all are. It just depends on the day. So
real.
So that was what was cool about playing those roles. I found a lot of fun in their connection as actual friends in real life. You don't get to see them interact with the fact that the same actor gets to play two people who were friends in real life.
Yeah.
Like makes playing them make more sense. You know, one is French and then the other one is a guy who wishes that he was French a little bit.
Right.
But I would say from a paper standpoint, playing Thomas Jefferson was more fun because it's a more fleshed out character on the page.
Okay.
Marquis de Lafayette. I don't want to say he's underwritten because he is by no means underwritten, but what he serves in terms of the story of the first act is just not as, you know, it's more a young man at war than it is the mind of Thomas Jefferson, you know?
Right. I've always wondered because there's so much to play with because, you know, Thomas Jefferson is like the cocky, arrogant guy, you know, and
that's the way of looking at it. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, in a way, like, I guess not always, you know, but I don't know.
Well, no, that's how he's perceived, though.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Yeah. And then you have Marquis de Lafayette with the accent and the fun raps and all of that. Like there's just very different, you know, characters that you have to play in a matter of 2.5 hours. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, for me, there was letters that they wrote back and forth to each other. And that was something that locked me into that transition. Because I would say it takes me about 3 months with something before I really start settling into it and feel like I've had I'm starting to build a character, really.
Yeah.
And that was something that I found. Because I'll keep researching as I'm doing a show, not just after. Sure. We opened and as we were in San Francisco, I found these letters between the two of them debating, or not even, it wasn't even a debate. It was just talking about the horrendous nature of America and its founding and its inception.
With slavery.
And it was like the one aspect that Marquis de Lafayette didn't like. He said that it was the stain of America because he only visited one time after the war and he came through and visited with Thomas Jefferson and everything. And then in their correspondence with each other, he shamed Thomas Jefferson for the enslavement of the African people. And Thomas Jefferson, funny enough, agreed with him. And then, you know, his, I don't like to talk about this aspect of Thomas Jefferson because people don't often talk about this, especially when we talk about the founding fathers and the country that they ideally wanted to build, which Thomas Jefferson based a lot of his ideas off of the story of Camelot, and which was a French tale.
Never heard of Camelot. What is that?
No, yeah. Right. But it was a newer French tale back then, right?
Yeah.
So, and he was the ambassador to France. So,
right.
And he spent half of his life over there. So writing the Declaration of Independence with a lot of these ideals that are found in the story of Camelot, that are found in French society and the evolution of democracy. Thomas Jefferson agreed that that he didn't see a way that America could really thrive as the country that they wanted it to be when one group of people had enslaved another, even if those people became free.
That interesting.
Yeah, he just thought it was too big of a original sin to really overcome. And I look at where we're at today and it's like, it certainly feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But there was other things that he wrote in those essays that I just found fascinating. But, you know, the biggest thing that I locked into for him as a character was the fact that this dude had migraines. And what is he really, when we think about it, what is he really famous for? Writing a couple really great essays that were like 2.5 pages long.
Right.
Like we did that how many times in high school? Like,
right. Real. Oh my God. Doing it now in college.
How many of us like bullshitted our way through that?
Right.
And people were like, oh, this is great. A+.
Right.
So.
Oh my God.
Let's just take a time out.
You're
Let's
coming for me, Jordan.
What did you say?
You're coming for me.
I'm
right
coming
now.
For myself. I'm exposing myself. I would even bring other people into this.
Hilarious. But,
you know, and so when you look at it from that real perspective, and then you find the tragedy that he went through in his life and losing the love of his life so young, having alcoholic tendencies.
Yeah.
And then just kind of not wanting to do anything. And he suffered from migraines. So then it's like, all right, well, that's easy. That's all. I got all that. Like, this is a dude who the fun for my Thomas Jefferson comes from the need to run away from pain. And so when someone like Hamilton makes him actually have to think and actually have to work and actually literally is his headache, then conflict is easy because it's like, oh, I just dropped you. Because it's like, you know, conflict is just apparent because you have this dude who's always working to try to make things better versus a guy who, I did my thing. We're good. Like, I know it's shit, but like, there's not really much more we can do, which are sentiments that you can find in his own writings.
Yeah.
Which is a gift as an actor, you know, if you get to play a real person.
The more I learn about Hamilton and the more I hear about Hamilton and everything of the stories of our history of the country and the United States in general, I feel like there's like 17 branches of Hamilton musicals that could be created and beyond like Hamilton, just like now called Thomas Jefferson and all these things. Like, it's crazy.
Well, it's funny you said that because at a Ham for Ham, I was asked the question and my first response was, well, in my musical, Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, my God.
That's, you know, as characters, we're all the lead in our own play. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I can't think I'm a villain. Yeah.
That's hilarious. That's kind of awesome though. We got to talk Camelot. Huge fan of Camelot, first of all. I saw you guys at opening night. I was there at the red carpet talking to you, and you are just a treat. You know, I could talk to you forever. And your performance I was able to see after opening is just even more spectacular and more of a treat. I'm obsessed with it. So now, and you rightfully so got recognized for your performance in the show. Talk to me about this show and how this kind of came about, because you've been with the show now since 2019 at the Gala production, starring opposite of Lin Manuel, which is pretty cool, which did Hamilton and everything. So talk to me about this whole process and kind of like where we are today with it.
Man, it's been a journey. I left My Fair Lady. I opted not to renew my contract because I wanted to spend more time with my family. Yeah. And I wanted to get involved in TV and film. And what I've learned about that world is that you have to commit to being available for them. Uh-huh. Whereas like in theater, like it's, you know, it's a huge time commitment, and TV and film people aren't as interested in you if they know that they can't have you whenever they want you, which is, you know, now there's no writer strike. So no one wants anyone, but there's a writer strike. So, and SAG's about to go on strike too. So really it's like, oh geez. Thank God we're in the theater. But I got a call. I was sitting at Telsey for an audition, and I got a call from Bart, and he asked me what I was doing, and I told him, and I was meant to go out to, I was going out to LA for a couple weeks to do some writing, and he was like, do you want to do Camelot with Lin and Saleha? And I was like, sure, I'm not going to say no to that.
Don't pull my arm.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no questions asked.
Wow.
Bart and Lin and Saleha Pfeiffer. Yeah, of course. And so I just saw it as a great opportunity to work with Bart in a deeper capacity on a character that was different and more involved than one such as Freddie.
Yeah.
And that was a great 2 weeks. And I thought that's what it was really all it was going to be. Bart did ask if I thought the show had potential for a revival. And I said, yeah, just have to, like, you know, of course.
Right.
It's great material. Just kind of, wow. I got called in to do the workshops from the time we started doing readings of them back in August of 21. And
So that was really when you started with the show at the Gala performance. There was nothing before that. It kind of just started there and then worked its way to the revival.
It was the Gala performance. And then I got a call from Bart saying that they wanted to do, they're rewriting the script with Aaron Sorkin, and they wanted to read it.
Unreal. And this was
August of 2021.
And, so like during the pandemic?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so
the pandemic hit in 2020, right? Yeah.
Yeah. March. So
it was August of 2021. Yeah, so I was flying back and forth between, like, as soon as the border opened up, basically they asked, and I was flying from Canada to here because I was filming in Vancouver at the time, and so we did readings after reading after reading after reading at the first couple of music, and here we are. It's been a wild experience. It's been again, a great learning experience. Like I said, I write myself. And so to learn from Aaron Sorkin, I haven't seen a lot of his movies. I've seen The Social Network and what's that Oakland A's one? I forget the name of it, but I forget the name. But Moneyball. That's the one.
Oh my God. I didn't even realize.
But so to get to work with him and see how he operates draft to draft to draft was that what? For me, of this, the huge blessing and learning the style of the piece, which is very French and Parisian, and, it's been a great thrill and a great joy, and again a way to connect to my Aunt Kathy and connect. You know, I've changed so much since the time we started on this show 4 years ago to now. And to bring that to the character and to be working on a character for this long is not something I've ever done. So it's a blessing. And then when I got nominated, all I wanted to do really was keep working and keep growing and keep finding more with my amazing castmates in Andrew and Philippa, because they are phenomenal.
Oh my God.
They crazily didn't get nominated, which makes no sense to me. I haven't seen the other shows, but it's
twice Pippa snubbed.
That to me, though, is the perfect example of what I always say, which is why I don't like awards.
Yeah,
because like that shit's stupid and dumb. Like, not like this is not sport. You can't
doesn't define you.
Everyone can't like sit down and watch every performance and feel the exact same way.
Right.
In sports, you're either going to win or you're going to lose.
Yeah.
Very obvious who on that day is the better opponent.
Yeah.
I understand awards for artistic achievement when it comes to like a lifetime and shit like that. Mm. But you know, I would rather celebrate the people that made their debuts. And
yes.
I said that to our cast the other day, I was like, how there's 12 people who have never done this before. And you're part of, a Tony nominated show, like that's rare.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Like that's really cool. Like we should all celebrate that and bring that energy.
Absolutely.
Every day. But it's exactly why awards like they're stupid. It's we all understand why they exist for commercial gain and artificial inflation of ego and money, but
and money. It all comes down to money. The business.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But you know, look at shows like Wicked. Look at shows like Phantom. Those were not highly lauded, and yet here they stand. Well, stood. Yeah. You know, it's been a blessing, and in terms of learning, I got to learn in this experience from a man named B.H. Barry, who is a master at what he does and the inventor, really, of fight direction in the theater and in film. So. To kind of not all film, but like in theaters specifically, you know, he's a brilliant man, and he called this his swan song. So to be able to do his work on stage along with our co-fight director, Brad, you know, to represent them, through my character feels really good.
Amazing.
Feels real good. Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible. Thank you for sharing that. Wow. It's incredible. Everyone go see Camelot. I know awards are, you know, you know, they're there. But I do mean this in the best way. Like, congratulations for the recognition, because you really do deserve some recognition for this performance and this show. I loved Camelot. I recommended everyone to go see it when I saw it. And I'm going to do it again. Everyone go see Camelot, go see Jordan. So much for doing this.
Thank you, Eli. I appreciate it.
Hope to meet you again in person and do this all again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredible, man. You're an inspiration for sure.
As are you.
You're just an incredible performer, and everything you stand for, and coming on here today, knowing a little bit more about you now as a human and not as a bunch of different characters has been really cool. So it was a pleasure to get to know more about you. I appreciate your time, and you have so much to take a bow for. Take a bow, Jordan Donica. Oh my God. Okay, story time. So Jordan and I, literally, we allotted 30 minutes because of this craziness schedule that he's going on with the Tony Awards and obviously performances as well, and everything that's going on with that. So with that being said, we allotted 30 minutes out of our schedule to chat and to talk about all the things. So we logged on and we found out that, like, he didn't have his computer, so he wasn't able to use what we were originally doing. So then we took up 15 minutes right there, and we had to reset it all up, and we had to go to Zoom and all of this nonsense. And then we got on, and he was just like, we kind of got distracted and lost in conversation because he was like, oh, I saw you in Finding Neverland. Like, and I was like, what? Like, that's crazy. And we kind of talk about it on the podcast and everything. And so, you know, we were just kind of, it was our first time, like, I guess, like, actually talking to each other, because it wasn't our first time meeting, because we met at the opening night of Camelot, which I covered. And that's up on YouTube. But it was like, oh, like, what's going on? Like, what is this? Like, tell me about it all. And he was just so sweet and everything. And then I was like, wait, we need to, like, actually record and get, like, content. And then we started, and it was just like, it was craziness, and it the connection was weird, and he was on his phone, and it was just like, oh boy. So it's not the all-time Take a Bow episode that, you know, you may all expect. It's what I expect every week, you know, good quality content to share with you all, some to entertain you all, and I apologize for that. Some of that was a lot of that actually was all out of my hands. I'm sorry in advance. But you know what? We did talk afterwards, and he did allot me a little bit more time. We went over our time that we had agreed upon due to, you know, the delay and everything like that, which I was grateful for. And we got 30 minutes, but we didn't get enough Camelot talk. We didn't get enough Pippa Sue talk. I had all of these, you know, I was very excited to ask a lot of these questions and more of that. I don't want to, like, talk about it right now, because he agreed to come back on, and we're going to talk a little bit more about his career and his journey through Camelot and everything like that. But as you could probably tell, we kind of left abruptly and everything like that. So just a little story time to explain to you all what happened, what's going on, and Zoom only, like, you have a timer on Zoom, and then that, like, literally Zoom, like, quit on us, and because of the timer, but he wasn't able to log back on because he had a run. And so it was one thing after the other. But you know what, we're gonna do it again, and we're gonna do more talk, and it's gonna be awesome. And what we did get, I was very very excited about and interested in. And so hopefully you all found the same. But if you are a fan of him through Camelot, I'm sorry we didn't get enough of that chat in, but we are gonna be doing more of it, so stay tuned for that. So thrilled to have him on, and thank you, Jordan, for fitting me into your schedule and willing to come on. So congrats to you on the Tony nomination and what he had to say about the awards and everything. It was fascinating and so true. You know what, I wanted to tell him that, like, it's really cool to see both him and, like, Josh Groban, even, you know, some of those deeper voices being recognized for their work, because you know,
oftentimes, like nowadays, we're not seeing a lot of baritone on Broadway, and we're seeing a lot of tenors on Broadway. And if you're not like a, if you can't play like a 16-year-old who's hitting like high C's, thanks, Ben Platt. But no shade, like it's great because you're phenomenal, and the people that can do it are just so gifted and phenomenal. But you know, not everyone has that ability, and that's a very certain person and performer and artist. So I was excited to see more of that kind of being recognized this season. We have a little bit of everything being recognized this season. So I thought that was very, very cool and very, very exciting to see for the future. So again, thank you so much, Jordan, for coming on. Thank you to all of you who came and enjoyed this episode and listened to this episode this week. And we have another one coming out Friday. I'm seeing Shucked the Musical today, Tuesday, June 6th. Very excited for it. I will have my review maybe posted, maybe just here on the podcast on Friday. But I'll keep you all updated, and I'm just super excited to see it. It's going to be the last one of the season that I needed to see for like best revival, for the musicals, that is, for best revival and best new musical. So I'm very excited that I'll be able to watch them all and do my proper Tony preview. And then with plays and everything, I didn't get to see them all, but hopefully, I don't know, I'll make my best guess. Anyways, that's all I have for you folks this week. Thanks again for tuning in. I can't wait to see you all Friday. I don't have to say see you next week. I will see you all Friday, and you know, go watch some theater. Enjoy the Tonys if you aren't able to listen to Friday's episode before the Tonys. Enjoy it all, and I will see you all very soon. Bye, everyone. Have a great week. For this episode's Curtain Call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, Kimberly Garris, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Next in line to take a bow are our fabulous editors, Jessica Lauren, who edits the audio of the podcast that you just listened to, and Tessie Tokash, who edits the videos and visuals for this podcast. And how about a bow for our executive producer, Chris Griner? And our final bow are extra special to the patrons, Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners of PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. If you enjoyed this week's episode, make sure to subscribe on the platform that you are currently listening to this on, or go check out our YouTube where you can watch the episode. You can also subscribe, like, and comment on there as well. If you're more into the regular social media and want to follow us, you can do that at Take A Bow Podcast across all social media platforms. The music of this podcast was made by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon, and the logo was created by Giselle Bustos. And that wraps up this episode's Curtain Call. Thank you all again for listening to this week's episode, and I can't wait to see you next week. Bye, everyone. Have a great week.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.